This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow of the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. We come now to a Duke Law School professor who is now appointed to be a very critical post in the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. As I understand it, this is a regulatory chair at the Federal Reserve Board's long and beautiful table. And the regulatory part that is most exciting now is, I believe, the idea of using the Federal Reserve and its powers for climate change. How does that work, Richard?
Very badly, I think, is the one-word answer. What happens is the Fed has the power to regulate the general economy. And the traditional mission that it had were twofold, one which makes sense, the other does not. Their key thing was to try to figure out how it is that you ensure a measure of price stability so that inflation is relatively constant. The theory behind this is amazingly simple, is that if you know that money is constant today in value relative to what it is tomorrow, or that it's only going to change at a very accurately predictable rate, it's easy to enter into transactions that have long terms, whether they be construction contracts, long-term loans, or anything else, and by getting rid of one measure of uncertainty. So what the Fed does by stabilization is it encourages commerce. When it tries to regulate labor markets, it's not the right tool. It only worked with macro stuff. Labor markets are much more controlled by things like minimum wage laws, anti-discrimination law, pension laws, and so forth. I happen to think there's a lot wrong with the regulation of labor markets in the United States, mainly in the form of direct government overregulation. But even if you believe that there should be regulation, you can't use a single tool, the sort of interest rate, to deal both with financial stuff and with the stuff having to do with labor. Why is that? Because in one case you really think you ought to up the interest rates, and for the other thing you think you ought to lower them. You can't handle two inconsistent measures with the single tool that you have, interest rate. So break it off. The same thing is true with respect to climate change. It's a very complicated subject. In my view, most of the stuff that we hear today is might hysterical. The short-term situation, i.e. over the last 10 years, has been relatively stable. A lot of the apocalyptic decisions are made upon extremely dubious assumptions of how the future is going to be. And to give you one illustration about this, if you went back to 2010 and you started to talk to people about the future of coal, they had these nightmare scenarios that the stuff would get higher and higher levels of production, become dirty and dirty, the whole country would come to pass. By the time you actually saw what went on, the precise fact that coal became relatively expensive in all sorts of ways, the other stuff meant that its consumption had gone down by half, natural gas had gone up. There was just lots of changes in this particular market. The Fed has no expertise whatsoever. And one of the things that we want to do is to make sure that you don't have government, through the way in which it regulates banks or other people, trying to figure out industrial policy, to figure out which particular firms or which particular causes are better. I'm not a fan of the EPA, but at least it's an organization that's directed towards the right kinds of things. And it turns out if they do something wrong, you could try to correct a single agency more than you can correcting three or four agencies when you don't know who's done what. So Ms. Raskin turns out to be a climate hawk. She doesn't defend this position in any effective way. And then what she wants to do is to take the wrong tool to deal with this particular problem, which means that if you put climate change on the plate, the actual financial stuff having to do with price stability is going to be pushed off the stake. You can't do both things at the same time. So if you follow the drift of what I said, I think the Fed should have since it has only a single instrument, it should have only a single mission. Instead of going from 2-1, we have something going from 2-3. And in the Biden administration, it turns out that there's no downside whatsoever to increased regulation with respect to climate. Just a couple of points. Go ahead.
I want to introduce an example and see if I understand what okay. The intention here is. ExxonMobil, certainly associated with big oil for more than a century. ExxonMobil is now proposing to reduce its emissions to net zero by such and such a date. And the way to do this is to control emissions in the Permian field to make other adjustments that will cost money, and they're hoping for tax abatements or other subsidies. It'll cost money, but it is to achieve net zero. Does that mean that banks will be held responsible for making loans to ExxonMobil as it goes through this transformation? Or does that mean that ExxonMobil is to be
Raskin, there's a serious problem about this, which is when you start to do financial audits and climate audits, whom do you do it? And if you only do it of a company, large retailers make very little. They buy a huge amount from other companies. Do you require them to do climate audits of their suppliers as well as of their own operations? That creates a surreal kind of duplication because these suppliers are independently subject to regulation already. So why do you want to double this thing up? There's no particular reason to do so. The other point that you're making is you've got this huge movement in the United States. I think it's actually somewhat panicky of companies trying on their own to control their supply chains and their emissions. To some extent, this is perfectly good sense to them. If you can eliminate the wastage that comes out of the Permian field, you get a higher return on your investment. It may be that it's not perfectly correlated with social welfare, which is why you have to have some kind of a penalty. And the correct thing generally to do if the emissions are at tolerable levels is to tax them accordingly so that people will substitute in better plans for achieving given goals for worse ones. But the single biggest obstacle to that today is the EPA itself with its crazy permitting processes. What happens is if you want to get a new plant in, you have to be absolutely perfect. So if the current situation gives you 100 units of pollution and you propose a situation that gets you down to 10, they spend their time saying, why aren't you at 8? And in the meantime, the existing plants get worse and worse. So the first thing that you want to do, essentially, is to make it very easy for companies to introduce new sources of supply, new sources of pollution, if what they do is they take out things that are very much greater. Well, and so that's the part of it.
I want to understand. Then the Federal Reserve would be okay with ExxonMobil calling itself a green innovation company and making these
plans. Well, they're that. The question is not whether they're facing. The question is, are they going to tell lenders that they have to do it in this, that, or the other way? And ExxonMobil is better able to do this than any of the kind of lenders. So if there's direct regulation, the need you do it. But one of the things that's been rather encouraging, in the United States, we've had tremendous success with carbon abatement to the extent that this is a good thing. And most of it comes through the change of private companies and the way they run their supply chain. Well, these guys are doing a fine job right now. Don't mess around with them. The real problem with respect to pollution is one word, China. Now, you start looking now, the United States is completely dominated by China on every one of these metrics. So the coal production in the United States is about 10% what the coal production in China is.
Right.
And if they keep going in this particular way, nothing that we do will make the slightest bit of difference. So what we do is we have this peculiar U.S.-centric situation there when all the difficulties coming with China like it is on just about every other front that we have today. And this is a diversion. What we really need to do is to get some way to crack down on China. And strangely enough, one of the things that would help to do that would be to have an honest system for intellectual property management, which we don't have. So all the good technologies, and I've worked for clients who've had this problem, say, I can't export my technology for the Chinese plants that I have. And why can't I do it? Because they'll steal it, give it to one of their state-owned companies, and I'll get no form of relief
whatsoever. We have 1 minute, Richard. Go ahead.
And so, I mean, what I was trying to say about all of this is you have to put these things and get the right tool and the right organization to do it. Ms. Raskin knows absolutely nothing about climate change, as far as I can tell, given the public kinds of statements. And what you do is you take the Fed, do what's right that it can handle, and then you use other systems of regulation to deal with this. And this, so you don't want to start with the assumption that whatever regulation we have is too little. There's many kinds of historical statements. And then when you do regulate, what you want to try to do is to have a regulation of the sort which does as little to productive activities while encouraging as much as you can pollution abatement. And if you change the environmental law, it would do this. My friend Mario Arroyo wrote a little column about some pipeline obstacles to the ACC. And what happens is even when you're trying to transfer solar energy from one place to another, the Greens are going to kill that kind of transmission as well. You have to get more sensible within the direct area, and the Fed has nothing useful to add.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,